Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/truetransparencypricing. Happy you'll be if the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
Midday 180 served up by Wendy's. Up with the $5 biggie bag. More of your calls coming up. Austin Price of VolQuest.com joins us at 11:45. Every Monday at this time, John Feinstein. He's presented by All American Pest Control, offering general pest control for your home, termite protection, or yard treatments for fleas and ticks. You can also bundle these services together to save money and time. Visit YuckBugs.com for more information. YuckBugs.com. John, how are you today?
I'm well, Jonathan. I hope you guys are doing okay. Hey, I have good news for Tennessee fans.
Great.
Basketball season starts tomorrow.
Rick Barnes is still the coach of Tennessee and not at UCLA. That's the good news for Tennessee right now.
That is also good news for Tennessee fans. Yes, it is.
You know what's amazing, though? This is we're going away from football for one thing. The way Tennessee's recruiting in basketball, I never thought I'd see the day where the guys they're recruiting, they're up there with Kentucky, Duke, and North Carolina in the next two recruiting classes. It's amazing how quickly one five-star guy, and then you add another one to the next year, and suddenly you're swimming in these waters with possible one-and-done guys at Tennessee.
Yeah, and again, it gets back to who your coach is. And Rick, it's not a coincidence that Rick has won as many games as he's won. He's coached a Final Four team. He was hugely successful at another football school. I guess Tennessee's still a football school. In Texas before he came here. And you guys know how I feel about Rick on a personal level, but he's a borderline Hall of Fame coach. I don't know how much longer he'll coach, but if he were to get back to another Final Four or win a national championship, certainly, I think he'd get serious Hall of Fame consideration. Tennessee's very lucky to have him.
Does Antonio Brown ever play again in the NFL?
Oh, boy. I'm going to say yes. I mean, none of us buys his, you know, I'll never play again tweet from the weekend. Obviously, if he gets the chance to play and gets the chance to get paid again, he will play. The reason I answer yes after I hesitate is because I don't think Roger Goodell is going to ban him for life. I mean, he's never done that to anybody. He might put him on the commissioner's exempt list for the rest of this season. He might get a half a season suspension, maybe even a whole year suspension. Again, we don't really know what the NFL investigation is going to show. But I think at some point, probably next season, he's going to be given the opportunity to play again by the commissioner first. And somebody will sign him. Because he'll, you know, he's a workout nut. He's always in great shape. And he'll go and work out and show, you know, do individual workouts for teams if necessary. And somebody will give him probably a minimum contract with very little money up front and say, come on in, and if you can help us, great. And if you can't, we'll cut you.
John, I remember asking, we were discussing Bill Belichick and how he doesn't respond to questions about Antonio Brown and things. So why are so many in the media up in arms over his reaction to Dana Jacobson's questions?
Well, I just think that it because of the subject matter, it's not like it's one of those deals where they lost badly to Kansas City on a Monday night, and he's just saying we're on to Cincinnati, we're putting the game behind us. I think there is some feeling that because they signed him, because the Patriots did sign Antonio Brown, that Bill Belichick kind of owes the public an explanation of what happened, what their thought process was when they signed him. I think it's pretty simple. They thought he could help their team. And what their thought process was when they cut him. Again, I think it's pretty simple. I think the NFL let the Patriots and the other 31 teams know this guy's going to be disciplined. And he's probably not going to play for you the rest of this season. Unlikely, maybe not impossible, but unlikely. and they just decided to cut bait rather than continue to put up with the circus that is Antonio Brown. But, you know, let's be fair. Bill's consistent. He never answers questions that are uncomfortable. One way, and he often doesn't answer questions that are comfortable. So, you know, he at least say this about him. It's not like he's a loquacious guy who all of a sudden is shutting down. He's a guy who is often shut down, who's continuing to be shut down.
I'm going to give you an unconventional take on this whole deal with Dana Jacobson. I think she's a good reporter.
I love Dana Jacobson. I worked with her at CBS Radio.
I think you're right, John, in that absolutely Bill Belichick is going to give everyone a non-answer on that. I think she did her job well by asking the question that she had to ask. I think the response to this, where her colleagues are acting like she's covering a war in Iraq because she got stared at, she's a professional. I'm sure she's had coaches mad at her before. She handled it well. I think this is almost sexist when people come to defend her and act like this is a big deal, because we're not having that same response to a male reporter. I think she should be treated with that same respect. To me, this is Bill Belichick not being sexist by staring her down and responding probably the exact same way he would to you if you asked the question.
Yeah, I
think you're right. I think you're right, Chad. I don't think there's any doubt that his response would have been the same to anybody, male or female. Maybe people are overreacting, A, because they're being a little sexist, and B, because everybody likes Dana. I mean, if you know Dana, you like Dana. She's that kind of a person. Look, we've all had those moments. I can remember at the Final Four in 1984 when Georgetown won, and I had written the story in which I first used the phrase Hoya paranoia. And I had been told by the Georgetown people, don't ask John Thompson a question in a press conference because he's not going to answer it. Well, of course, I had to test that. I couldn't, be intimidated. So I asked him a question. He glared at me and said next question and went on. It's no big deal to me. Ironically, John and I are now good friends all these years later. But we've all had those moments where somebody either stares us down. John Tudor's name came up for some reason a couple weeks ago. I can't remember why. You remember the old Cardinals Red Sox pitcher?
Yes.
Red Sox Cardinals pitcher. And I was reminded of a scene in the World Series clubhouse in 1985 where he had pitched a four-hit shutout. John Tudor was one of the crankiest people I ever met in sports. And he looked at the group around him. He just pitched a four-hit shutout in game four of the World Series. So needless to say, a lot of people wanted to talk to him. And his first comment was, what's it take to get in here, a driver's license? And one of the writers from Boston, actually, who figured he'd known John with the Red Sox so he could maybe help things out, said, well, John, it's the World Series, and you just pitched a four-hit shutout, so people have a lot of questions for you. John just glared at the guy and said, how the hell did you get in here? And it was one of those moments where I wanted to say, screw you, and walk away. But people wanted to know what John Tudor thought, and eventually did answer a few questions grumpily. But we've all dealt with those moments. And like you said, Dana's a big girl. She can take care of herself. She's fine.
John, watching a little bit of Michigan this past week, I thought we were going to see a great game.
You were wrong.
Yeah, I know. I'm always wrong about Michigan in the big moments. How would you describe Jim Harbaugh's work so far with the Wolverines program, and what do you forecast on the horizon there?
I wrote a column a few weeks ago just before they played Army and talked to Harbaugh. And Harbaugh, if you get him in the right mood, is always really quotable and helpful. And I looked up his record. I think he's like 40-15. At Michigan now, early in his fifth season, and that's a pretty good record. The problem is he was brought to Michigan by all these Michigan people to beat Ohio State, to beat ranked teams, to get into the college football playoff, not to go to the Gator Bowl or the Citrus Bowl or whatever. And that's what Michigan has been for the last 4 years. And as he said after Saturday's game, they were completely outplayed and outcoached in every way. The score wasn't even as close. The game wasn't as close as the final score. I mean, they were down 35-0. And I watched them play Army from stem to stern a couple weeks ago, and they should have lost that game. Army let a great opportunity get away. They made a couple critical errors, the kind they don't normally make, and lost a game they should have won. Michigan should be 1-2, to be honest with you. I think Shea Patterson has been, to put it mildly, a disappointment. And I think Michigan people, I know Michigan people, are getting really antsy about when does this turn around? When do we, you know, if you look right now on paper, what chance do you think they have against Ohio State this year? Not great. I think I saw a stat, Jonathan, that going into the Ohio State game last year, they'd given up 125 points in 11 games. You know, they had this vaunted defense, and then Ohio State hung 62 on them. So I honestly don't know what the future is for Harbaugh, whether if they go, let's say, 8-4 this season. People just say, he's had 5 years. Let's push him out. You know, they can't fire him because of his contract. Or he might say, look, this isn't working for whatever reason. Or they might say, okay, he's got a long-term contract. Let's see if he can turn it around next year or the year after. But I think it's clearly his future there is in at least some doubt. And I think, I don't know about you, Jonathan, I'm totally surprised by this. I thought for sure he would turn it around. You know, not beat Ohio State every year, but beat them every other year or at least once in 3 years, worst case. Remember the first year there, they lost an overtime game there where there was a fourth down spot that I know Michigan people are still questioning. And everybody said, oh, okay, you know, they barely lost the first year. They'll win next year or the year after. And it's, the margin has gotten wider. So I'm stunned by this because the record says that Jim Harbaugh is a hell of a football coach. I mean, he built San Diego into something. He turned Stanford around after years of not playing well. He took the 49ers to the Super Bowl. So I don't get this at all. I wish I was smart enough to figure it out.
Well, in the department of we really can't ever expect anything in sports and we can't predict it. How about everyone who had a problem with Daniel Jones from Duke being drafted so high by the Giants?
And I'm raising my hand. I'm one of them.
And I know it's 1 week, John, and look, it could still turn out and be a very bad pick for the Giants, but boy, did he surprise me yesterday.
He surprised me. I think he surprised most people, and I, you know, a lot of people, and I'll put myself right at the top of that list, questioned Dave Gettleman on the pick, and I thought that Washington caught a break when Gettleman went with Daniel Jones and left Haskins open. For Washington to take with the 15th pick, and he may turn out to be a hell of a player. We don't know. But he certainly played well yesterday. Now, they were lucky to win. Kid missed a 34-yard field goal at the buzzer. Tampa Bay should have won that game. But Jones, you can't criticize Jones playing anyway. I mean, he's responsible for 4 touchdowns. He didn't turn the ball over. His first NFL start. So at least for right now, we have to say that maybe Gettleman knew a little bit more than the rest of us. Now, that being said, like you said, Chad, it's one game, and you know the way people overreact in sports. Gettleman is now the greatest general manager in history, and Daniel Jones is Y.A. Tittle and Phil Simms combined.
Well, moving forward, what's bittersweet about it is he loses Saquon Barkley.
Yeah, and that's going to, you know, that doesn't necessarily, that does affect Jones, but I mean, Saquon Barkley is clearly a star, and look, I don't think the Giants are going anywhere this season, even if he was healthy, but
right. Him
being out for an extended period certainly makes it that much less likely.
I preface this by saying it's 3 games, and he has time to figure this out. But through 3 games, Freddie Kitchens does not look like he fully understands how to be a head coach in the NFL for the Cleveland Browns, and part of me feels bad for Browns fans with all the expectations going into this season. And now you realize, oh, they're breaking in a new head coach that really doesn't have it together yet.
Who was never a coordinator.
Nope.
I mean, that was what kind of raised your eyebrows at the hire. Now, you know, Pat Riley came out of the radio booth years ago to coach the Lakers and become a Hall of Fame coach. So sometimes you have a gut feeling about somebody and it turns out to be right and I don't think that you're required to be a coordinator in order to be a head coach, but that's been the route for a long, long time now, hasn't it? I think Kitchens was somewhat of a surprise. He brought a lot of good emotion to the Browns late last year. But, you know, you guys both know this. There's an old saying in sports. You frequently, if you're not in playoff contention in any sport, don't necessarily trust your results from the first month or the last month of the season. And the Browns did a lot of their best, played a lot of their best football the last month of last season. Some of it was Baker Mayfield maturing as a rookie quarterback, and then they went out and got Odell Beckham and made a couple other good moves that people thought would help them. But let's be fair, their entire secondary didn't play last night against one of the better quarterbacks in the league. So I wouldn't hit the panic button yet if I was a Browns fan, but certainly the result that I think really should disappoint people in Cleveland was them getting blown out by the Titans that first week.
Yeah, they're hitting the panic button on their upcoming schedule, though. Their next three of their next four are on the road, and they play at Baltimore, at San Francisco, home against Seattle, at New England.
Yeah, no, and you're right. And the Ravens are clearly one of the best teams in the AFC. You know, lost a close game in Kansas City yesterday. We all know what the Patriots are. Not so sure about the Seahawks after yesterday's loss at home to New Orleans. And I'm still not sold on the 49ers. Did you see any of that game yesterday?
They turned it over quite a bit.
And you know, the Steelers are playing a quarterback who's starting his first game in the NFL, and they made mistakes and let the 49ers hang around, and the game was at home. So, yeah, I hear what you're saying, Jonathan, but I think at least two of those four games might be winnable.
John, thank you as always, and we look forward to next week's visit.
My pleasure as always, and I will look forward to it too.
John Feinstein, presented by YuckBugs.com.